hard to negotiate. I let him have some of my time, and I still got my tie. When I was first assigned this subject, it happened that I was listening to radio and a program dealing with fiction, and it dealt with an ad agency that was providing the opportunity for people to visit anything in the past that they had ever wanted to visit. I immediately knew where I wanted to go. I wanted to go back to the first century church and to see how it functioned. Also, there was a TV program that I saw just a portion of that maybe some of you have seen. It was called, I believe, The Voyagers, which did basically the same thing, would take you back into history and give you the opportunity to see some of the things that had happened in the past. But the more that I've studied the New Testament church as in the first century as compared to the church today, I'm convinced that we know just about exactly what we need to know about it. And that as a result, we can very effectively function today as we ought. My responsibility in these 2 weeks is to try to present the basis for the beliefs that we basically hold. We go back, and many times we've heard the statement that where the Bible speaks, we speak, and where the Bible is silent, we are silent. I'm not sure that I totally agree with the idea that where the Bible is silent, that we ought to be silent, although I think I understand the basis for the thought. So we're going to be very basic for these 2 weeks, and we're going to deal with such things as how we become members of the church, the worship of the church, government of the church, benevolent work, and various types of things like this. And do we function today as the first century church did? Should we function as they did? What ways are we different, or should we be different than they were? Today I want to do something which I think, at least for me, was very important in developing this subject. And that's to deal with some historical background as far as the first century church was concerned. Now, I say the first century church, basically what I want to do is to try to create for you the atmosphere that existed when the church came into existence. We're going to be dealing basically with the Jewish side of life, because that's the atmosphere in which the church had its beginning, although it was expanded into the Gentile nation, into a basically pagan world. We do want to look at some of the things that caused some of the teachings that we have. And I think it's going to be extremely important for each one of you that as we look at these various aspects of the church, that you be able to try to place yourself into the particular circumstance that we're talking about. We find that that Israel, as far as a nation, really only had, until recent years, independence twice in its existence. And the first time was in the days of David, when it was probably reached its zenith as far as a nation. The second time was that during the period of what we call the Hasmonean dynasty, or the period of the Maccabees. This was founded as a result of the Maccabean revolt. Now, some of you probably understand, maybe some don't, that what we call the Maccabean period was that period basically between the Old Testament and the New Testament. This was during the Greco-Macedonian Empire decline, and the Roman government as yet had not really began to rise. But it wasn't too long before, within the nation of Israel, that civil war arose, and we find that the Roman government had then come onto the scene. Under Pompey, who came from Rome, he crushed the revolution or the civil war that was taking place within Israel. And as he came to the city of Jerusalem, the last stronghold was the temple area, and he was determined that he was going to see what was in the Holy of Holies. And of course we understand that only the high priest was to go into that area. He went into the Holy of Holies, Pompey did, and this was sacrilege in the eyes of the Jews, and this was not soon forgotten, and created what was to be the attitude of the Jews towards the Roman government, the basic attitude at least of the Jewish people. This took place in approximately 63 B.C. We find that Judea was reduced to a Jewish state and made a tributary of Rome, and John Harkness II, who was a member of the Maccabean family, was confirmed in the priesthood, and he became the leader of the nation, but was not given the title of king. Unrest continued to exist as the Roman government was rising and into great power, and we find that as a result, Julius Caesar emerged as the leader of that nation. Antipater, who was a friend of Harkness, was also the man who organized supplies for Caesar. He was made a tax-free citizen and was given the title of procurator of Judea, and the procurator's responsibilities was basically to procure funds and the financial responsibilities within that nation for the Roman government. We find that Antipater celebrated his newfound power by appointing his two sons as military prefects of Judea and Galilee. Their names were Phasael and Herod. Well, that's a name that we recognize and have seen and understand. This is the Herod the Great that we know of in the Scriptures at the time of the birth of Christ. We find that with the assassination of Caesar, this led to a fresh outbreak of civil war, and this was to be basically the type of atmosphere that would exist within this Roman Empire. Brutus and Cassius going against Caesar's followers, Mark Antony and Octavian, that final battle taking place in Philippi, to which, of course, we have, in Philippi, and we have a letter that was written to the Philippians. The death of Caesar was a great blow to the Jews because they had received extraordinary favors from him. Phasael and Herod were appointed joint tetrarchs of Judea, and as a result, after a meeting with Octavian, we find that Herod became the sole ruler of Rome, became known as Augustus Caesar, and he made Herod king of the Jews. So Herod, we find, was a man who always found himself wanting to be on the good side of whoever was in power. So he, by bribes and various other things, made sure that his position was steadfast. The thing that I want to mention in particular about Herod this morning is the fact that he had a great love for his wife, and as a result, we find that whenever he left to go on many of his travels, he gave the order that should he not return, that his wife was to be killed, because he just, because of jealousy, could not stand the thought of someone else having her for his wife. Now, this was to begin the development of the attitude that Herod had within his life, and he became a very paranoid individual. Not only did he leave this concerning his wife, but we find that he was jealous even of his own sons. So one of his sons, set Herod against two of his other sons, had them killed, likewise the third son, because Herod was afraid of him. Even taking over his throne, he had him killed. So this caused Augustus Caesar to make a comment that Herod, though he was born an Edomite, yet he practiced the Jewish religion along with paganism, and we understand within the Jewish religion they did not eat pork. So we find that Augustus made the comment that it was safer to be Herod's pig than to be his son. So he was recognized as extremely paranoid, so we can understand better, I think, his suspicious nature. When Christ came into the world and he was declared to be the king of the Jews, Herod was king of the Jews, and he was afraid that this man Jesus was going to take his position. Well, we find after the death of Herod, there were a series of kings and procurators. Among them, Archelaus is mentioned in Matthew 2 and 22, Herod Antipas in Luke 3, 1 and 2, Philip, Herod Agrippa. Among the procurators that we're familiar with would be Pontius Pilate, Felix, and Festus. So this gives us somewhat, I believe, the political atmosphere that existed. Now, as we look about ourselves, and as far as the church is concerned, We see, or maybe we don't recognize it, but our surroundings do have a great deal to do with how the church is able to function and some of the attitudes that we have in life. I want to deal with some of the religious groups of the day. We have the feeling, I think, that it's very difficult for the church today because there are so many different, and we put in quotes, Christian groups that are in the world today and various other religious groups. We, I believe, many times have the attitude that the church has it much more difficult than it did in the first century because we have so much more religious thought to contend with. And I guess to a degree that is somewhat true. Although we want to try to show this morning that among the religious groups that did exist, there were some thought that made it very difficult for the church. And so as we look at these transparencies this morning, I'm not necessarily concerned that you necessarily get down everything that I have on here if you have a method of shortening up some of the phrases and so forth. I surely would encourage that you do that. I have a reputation for moving along rather fast when I'm using transparencies, and I have a tendency to run through it very quickly, and I'm ready for another one, and I find many of you are not. Now, I won't be able to...
Turn the lights out.
It doesn't... Well, do you think that would help?
I can see it from here, but I don't know.
I think we might need a little... Pardon? This way. Is that visible from the back? That is, if you have good eyesight. If you don't, I can't do anything about that. Okay, the one group that we are most familiar with, and of course, is that we hear about is the Pharisees. We find that the Pharisees did originate during the Maccabean period. We're not known as the Pharisees to be. Begin with, but were the Hasideans, or known as the pious, those who were very pious. This group was probably the forerunner of the Pharisees. Now, there was division among the Jews during the Maccabean period, and this resulted as from political things, a political religious conflict as much as anything else, and so there was that split between the Pharisees and the Sadducees during that period. We find that the Pharisees were the straightest group of the Jews, very strict in the things that they followed. And in particular, we find that they were the paramount influence among religious life in those days. Their major concern was the preservation of the Mosaic Law and its way of life, and fear of encroachment against alien cultures. And in particular, they were very much afraid of the Greek culture, which was very prominent at that time. We remember the philosophers, impact of astrology, and all of the various pagan aspects of that society. And the Pharisees were very much concerned about that. The Pharisees also felt that that which came forth from the heart was just as important, was less important, or at least no more than equal importance with the outward act. The traditions of the elders came to be at least equal or superior to the law of Moses, and we find in Matthew 15, 2, 3, and 6 that Christ pronounced that those things were to be of no binding authority. We find that as a result of their interpretation of the laws and their writing of the laws and so forth, they commanded a great deal of reverence among the people. They multiplied the requirements of devotion, and they practiced religion in a way that was intended to impress people. I think if we look at Luke, the 18th chapter, the 11th and the 12th verses, we find probably almost everything mentioned there concerning the Pharisees that really give us an idea of the emphasis that they place. In Luke 18, verses 11 and 12, we recall this as the incident of the Pharisee and the publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. So they were known for their liberal almsgiving, for their much fasting, their long prayers, and their giving to much detail. And this was, in some respects, was good. In other respects, created a great many problems for them. So we find that as they developed as a sect of the Jews, that they became even more self-righteous. Their hypocrisy was condemned by Christ many times. Their inattention to the weightier matters of the law. And we find this in such scriptures as Matthew 5 and 20. Also in Matthew 16, 6, 11 and 12. And in chapter 23, the entire chapter, if you really want to read concerning the Pharisees, it's an excellent chapter to read. Gives us a good idea. And we find that the Pharisees even had various types within them. And I want to read a short paragraph that comes from the Talmud, which was basically a book of the traditions of the fathers and an explanation of them and how they were to keep the traditions of the fathers. And to give you an idea of the different types of Pharisees. So first there was the shoulder Pharisee, who wears his good deeds on his shoulder, as it were, so that all the world can see and admire him. Then there was the wait-a-bit Pharisee, who says, in effect, wait a bit until I have done the good deed waiting to be done, and of course, it never gets done. The third was the bruised Pharisee, who runs up against a wall and bruises himself rather than look at a woman. And this was from the standpoint of whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her, in their piety they might stick their head in the air or whatever to appear to be avoiding looking, and as a result run into a wall or whatever happened to get in their way. And fourthly, there was the pestle Pharisee. Now, a pestle was a thing that was used to mix mortar. It would be similar to a hoe, representing a bowed head. He walks with his head down in mock humility, like a pestle in a mortar. And then comes the reckon it up Pharisee, who is ever counting up the good deeds that he has done in order to see if they are sufficient to counterbalance the evil ones. And then there is the God-fearing Pharisee who took Job for his pattern. And the last type was the God-loving Pharisee who, like Abraham, friend of God, really loved his heavenly Father. Now, we don't know any people that's anywhat similar to those type of people. But that gives us an idea of the different types of Pharisees that existed in those days. They were probably characterized most of all by their scrupulous observation of three things: the tithe, religious separation, and rules of purification. And among the doctrines that they held were the immortality of the soul, the resurrection of the body, existence of spirits, and that man is rewarded or punished in the future life. Now the Jews, or the Pharisees, had charge of the synagogue and its worship and the practices and so forth that took place in the synagogue, the study of the law, the doctrinal, and the practical guidance of the people. Now there are other aspects of the existence of Jews at that day, and some of those we find coming about as within the group that we know as the Sadducees. I'm not going to be able to wait on everyone as far as these transparencies are concerned, so we'll try to do the best that we can. We mentioned the split that took place with the Pharisees and the Sadducees during the Maccabean revolt, and it was basically because the Pharisees felt the Sadducees were too much in favor with Greek culture. They had lived under Greek rule and influence for some time, and as a result, we find that there were among the Jewish leaders those that preferred the ways of Greek culture. And so we do find this group, which we know as the Sadducees, splitting up, and we have then the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They preferred to be known as the party of moderation. They courted the favor of the ruling nation. Of course, this was basically the Roman, although we find their existence did come into play during the latter part of the Greek Macedonian. They were not as zealous about their religion as was the Pharisees, and they were very much satisfied with the status quo. They were few in number, but they were the educated men, mostly wealthy and of good position, and we find that they placed political considerations to be as important or sometimes above the religion. The Sadducees denied the resurrection of future life, the existence of angels, believed in the freedom of the will, and that our actions are in our own power. Now, the interesting thing about that, and some of you that have followed more closely some of the things within our educational system today, you are familiar with that, which we call humanism. That whatever is man is able to do, he is able to do because of his own power. And it places a de-emphasis upon God. Certainly the day in which we live is not the first time that humanism has come into play in the lives of mankind. And the Sadducees followed, to some degree, that type of philosophy. They were in the highest office of the priesthood in Acts 5 and 17. It mentions that for us. They had the greatest power within the Sanhedrin, were the disciples of reason without enthusiasm, and this is a result of their adoption of the Greek culture. If you can reason it out, if you can't reason it out, then it must not have any purpose in life. Very little enthusiasm existed within this group. They were the ones in favor, as we mentioned, with the Romans, were in control of the priesthood, the temple sacrifices, and official authority. Though we find the Sadducees and the Pharisees often in opposition to one another, we find that many times they join together in an attempt to embarrass Christ. We find on one occasion Paul used the differences between them to put them at variance with one another in Acts 23, 6 through 10, when he was called into account before them. He mentioned the resurrection of the dead, and of course this set them at variance against one another immediately, and the Pharisees accepting the idea of resurrection and the Sadducees denying it. Well, there were some various other groups that existed that were, we might call lesser groups, but they did have an impact in the upon the church and some of the things that happened. And the first one that we want to mention is the Essenes. They were, I guess we would probably call them monks as we look at their idea towards life, although I'm more inclined to think that the monks developed from the philosophy of the Essenes rather than vice versa. In fact, I'm sure that it's true. They were an order of men of the Jews numbering about 4,000. They formed isolated colonies hoping to escape ceremonial defilement. Each colony had its own synagogue, a common hall for meals and assemblies, and provisions for daily bathing and running water, which was very important to them. Whoever became a member gave up all that he possessed to the colony. They read the law daily and nightly and tried to regulate their lives in every detail according to it. Their food and clothing were plain. They gave much time to prayer with a great emphasis on cleanliness. They rejected marriage, although there was some conflict with them. Some of them could not quite accept the idea of not marrying. They also rejected slavery. Now, there was a promise that they had to make when they became a part of this colony. That promise was to honor God, to be righteous toward man, to injure no one either at the bidding of another or at their own accord, to hate evil, to promote good, to be faithful to everyone, especially those in authority, to love the truth, to unmask liars, and to keep the hand from theft and conscience from unrighteous gain. Now, this all sounds good, the things that they profess. But we find that they became almost a group that could not continue to exist because they did not perpetuate themselves, although they were a very effective group for a period of time. And we're going to talk about another group in just a little bit that had some similarities to them. A group that was very much opposite to the Essenes were the Zealots. They were a sect of the Jews, probably broke off from the Essenes because of their militancy. They were a patriotic party started by Judas the Galilonite to resist Roman aggression. They were very much like the Pharisees. Doctrinally, there was no significant difference. But there was a real difference in method. The Zealots lived by force, and the Pharisees discouraged it. And death was preferred for self and family rather than obedience to any man. And many of them came to be called what, if I'm correcting it, correctly pronouncing it, the Sicarii or the Assassins. That word is the Assassins. I run off the edge of the paper before I realized it. They would knife anyone, anywhere, at any time, for any cause, as long as they felt it was for a just purpose. And this immediately brought to mind with me the Peter, as he drew out his sword and struck off the ear of Malchus. I'm not saying that Peter was a zealot, but I think this gives us an indication of some of the influence that some of these groups had, and I'm sure Peter was very much aware of the zealots, and maybe his temperament was such that subconsciously he accepted some of the idea that one must protect their beliefs at all costs. They were a left-wing group of fanatics. Of course, we don't have anything like that in the world today, do we? They played a leading role in bringing about the final rebellion against Rome, which led to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. Also in Acts, the 20th chapter, in the 3rd verse, we find the group that was waiting to ambush Paul was probably a group of zealots that were out to destroy him. All probability, it was the zealots who occupied the Masada. Now, those of you who are not aware of what the Masada is, it's I don't know what the Tom, is it between a hill and a mountain?
Definitely a mountain.
And flat on top with a fortress, and almost impossible to get to. And they held out in that area for 3 years against the Romans, and finally when the Romans were able to take it and get to the top of the hill, they found that the people had all committed suicide rather than to be taken captive. Two more groups we want to talk about just for a moment. First of all would be the Herodians. They were definitely a political group, a political religious group composed of Jews of influence who supported Herod's rule and consequently also the Romans. We find in Mark 3 and 6 and also in Mark 12 and 13 some political interplay where the Herodians took up with the Pharisees in an attempt to bring about difficulty for Christ in the things that he was attempting to teach. One other group that we're going to mention that you possibly have not even heard about would be the Qumran community. Those of you that have done any studying as far as the Dead Sea Scrolls are concerned, recognize that it was in this area near the Dead Sea that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. These people may well have been some of the Essenes, or at least a branch of them. They studied the Scripture intensively, wrote commentaries, and this explains some of the findings in that area of Qumran. So it would be safest to say that they were probably a branch within the Essene movement, and it's these people that that we do have to thank for having those manuscripts that we found. There are a couple of unknown sects that are mentioned in the Scripture in Acts 5 and 36. It mentions Thutis. Also in the next verse, verse 37, mentions Judas. And this is where Gamaliel said mentioned these two individuals that they had been responsible for some uprisings. It may have been more political than it was religious, but they had been responsible for some uprising and had died out, and said that this gospel that was being preached probably would just die out if the people would just leave it alone. If it was of God, they could not resist it. If it was of man, it would not exist. I want to talk a little bit about some of the social life of the day. We're not going to get into too much detail, but I think we need to understand some of the things that took place within society. We'll look first of all at the fact that the area was divided into three major geographic divisions, and they were very much the divisions were very much diverse. There was Judea. Probably the most tragic distinction among the Jews in Judea was that between the upper social class and the people of the land, who were the poor. There was a great deal of prejudice. There was a great deal of a class society that existed, and could be very difficult for those that were on the lower